Hello, hello again, and welcome back to the Podnuts Pro Podcast. I am Marvin B., and I am here with two wonderful gentlemen, two crazy guys, two friends of mine, Mr. Matt Rainey.
Hello, hello all. Hello, Marvin.
And Mr. Martin Obando.
Hey guys, how's it going?
We're doing pretty good. So here we are on episode 85 of the Podnuts Pro Business Podcast. I don't think that's the full name, but I thought it just sounded nice to add that on there.
And now he's going all ad lib.
Sorry. It was a short 3x5 plug.
So. We said we would stick to the script.
So, gentlemen, here we are, and we had a torrid show that ended up sultry last week. And how are we feeling this week?
I'm feeling, I guess I'll say normal. I don't want to have a weird adjective. Doing good this week. It's a nice week.
I'm wiped out. It's only Wednesday night, and I'm just tired. And this weekend is going to be rough. So
it's going to be rough. A lot of working.
It's life, family stuff. So
wish you were working.
Well, I'd stay out from standing in the rain for 3 days.
Oh, well, I mean, you do live in the Pacific Northwest, so you probably stand in the rain a lot.
I try not to.
Try singing in the rain? That should make it a lot better, right?
Yeah, that won't help at all. That doesn't help at all. Sorry. Oh, well, yeah. I'm
trying to help.
I know.
I'm kind of wiped out as well. We won't get into it, but... we had a good friend of ours pass away last week after a fierce battle with cancer. And so that was all. I had to push a lot of things back to do a memorial service on Saturday and push my server installation. I actually ended up doing it on Sunday. So it was a pretty big week. And so I'm still catching up because basically it was 3 days of zombie walking based on that. And this is catch up week. And then I'll be driving up to Fort Pierce tomorrow to set up a new office.
How far is Fort Pierce from where you are?
It's about an hour and a half from me.
I'm guessing that is somewhere north.
Yes, north. In between here and the Space Coast, my hometown. And shouldn't be a big deal. It's a new office already cabled and done. Four computers. They're remoting back into their main office down here in Fort Lauderdale. So. Shouldn't be too bad. It's just a Comcast installation I'm worried about.
Have you verified the circuit's working?
Yes. And I'll be doing that tomorrow. They're doing the installation all on the same day. So.
Yeah. Same day. Good. So it sounds like you need to plan your return trip when the circuit actually works.
Yeah. Well, I already know I have to go back because apparently somebody messed up and did not put the static IP on the order as requested 2 months ago. And of course, the sales rep who sold them the plan, you know, won't return calls now.
No, that sale's already over.
Yeah.
They're moving to the next sale.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So.
Well, that actually is related to one thing I want to start off with.
All right.
So here's a tip. When you, I got a call twice. Twice, I think, in the past week, maybe it was a week and a half, I get a call from an ISP, one of my clients that's out of town. Has to have their IP address changed, their WAN IP address. And they're pretty far away. I'm not going to drive there. It'd be like 20 hours drive. They're out of state. But we have WatchGuard routers. So I can easily access the router remotely. And they say, okay, we need to change the WAN IP. When can you do it? I said, I can do it now. Let's just do it and get it over with. I said, so they gave me the IP address. And here's the tip. Try and ping the IP address they give you before you do anything. Twice, I ping the IP they give me, and I get a response. And I ask them, why can I ping that already? I shouldn't be able to ping that. Oh, I don't know why you can ping it. Maybe it's the modem. Really? The modem's responding to the ping for this IP address? I said, I think you have the wrong IP address. Twice this happened. If I would have connected to the router and just put the IP address and save the config, I would have been locked out.
Yep.
Then I would have called somebody at the office to try and walk them through configuring the watch guard, which is not like a Linksys. I mean, I've done it before, but to do it, I've got to give them the passwords. And after I give them the passwords and reconfigure it, then I've got to change the passwords. It's ridiculous that this happened the last two times that an ISP has given me an IP address to change, and I can already ping it. So, tip, ping the IP address they give you before you put in your router, especially if you're remote.
And 20 hours away.
Yes.
Remember the DSL days when you could have a DSL modem and get that upgraded? And if you didn't wipe out the old modem and that modem was given to somebody else and they connected it, they would use your account information, and if you tried to log in with your modem, you guys would basically conflict. Remember those days?
Those days are nice. Although I have things similar because I have clients that call, all of a sudden they can't get online. And so I'm like, well, the router's up, everything's up. Call the ISP and they look into it. I have my, this is something similar. I have my client unplug their network, their router. Ping the IP, I get a response. Like, well, somebody, are you sure the router's unplugged? Yes, it's unplugged. I can still ping it. I call the ISP. Oh, I'm sorry. We gave your IP address to somebody else. Okay. Well, you're going to have to call them and have them change it because we've had it first. It's a static IP. We have services tied to this IP address. Oh, no. You're going to have to change yours. Are you serious? So you, that drives me wild. That happened to me a few times too. And you would think they'd be beyond that, that wouldn't happen, but it does. It happened to me within the last year. It's happened.
Wow.
So who won that battle?
I had to change the IP address. They couldn't call. They tried to contact other people, but they couldn't. I said, you contacted them to give them the IP address. And I almost thought about not changing it. Because if we're having problems, they're having problems. Let them get tired of the problems and call in and say, hey, what's the problem? And then let them change theirs. But since I called first, I had to change mine. I guess I blinked on that chicken race, I guess.
I was going to say, I'm surprised because I've had that happen in the past where they've given away the IP address and the owner just basically, you know, hounded them until they got it back. I mean, I think it took a day to reprovision everything, but they did get it back.
Yeah, it might take a while. And well, they didn't even give me that option. They just told me they couldn't. The other customer wasn't going to change. And of course, I said, is that because you're not talking to them? So,
well, you got Daryl. You needed the other Daryl.
To get it back up and running quickly, I went ahead and changed the IP address. Now, and it wasn't a big deal because the MX record was pointing to our spam patrol, our spam filter. So all I got to do is go into my spam patrol and redirect where the mail is sent after it hits my Barracuda. So the mail would still flow, which is a main concern when you're changing your MX records. I didn't change the MX record. I changed it back in. So it wasn't too bad.
But your clients lost full connectivity, though, right? Including
it was very spotty. It wasn't. They didn't lose full connectivity, but they were dropping. I think they were dropping like 50-60% packets. Hmm. It was. They called because it was slow, and the slow was generous. It really wasn't working. So yeah, it still happens.
All right. So that sounded like some fun.
Another network related issue. Let's see if this is like a game. I'm going to see what y'all think about this. Not to put you on the spot, but
we love it.
But I'm going to. Okay, got a client, two locations. In one location, they have two cameras. The people at the location with the cameras, and all the people listening can play along with this game, right? You can all guess what the answer is to yourself.
Do we get to guess out loud, though?
You can guess out loud. Okay. The people listening can guess out loud as well. We just won't hear it. Okay. So the people in the office with the cameras can see the cameras fine. The people in their other office can only access one camera, but not the other. What do you think? And they're connected across the VPN. So that when they're both accessing it through the local IP address, the 10 dot whatever, at both locations. Same IP, local address. So what do you think? Go time.
And we're sure we've got...
I got the answer. It's the first thing I checked.
Are the cameras turned on?
They're turned on because the people in the office with the cameras can see them fine.
But the person on the VPN cannot.
If a person can see one. The people in the office with the cameras didn't know there was a problem. The main office called me saying we can only see one of the two cameras.
But they do have a conflicting IP in the other office?
No.
That's my guess. I'm done.
I was thinking something along the same lines, but But my thought would be that the home IP address range is the same as the VPN, and so sometimes there's conflicts there. But they would that goes away because they can see one of the cameras.
Yes. Okay. So let's think about this. In the main office, the office with the cameras, if you ping it, it replies back to you. In the remote office, if you ping it, it does not reply back to you. So when you ping a device, how does the device respond? Through which default gateway?
Oh.
Really?
It sends out ping responses.
Well, no, I know that, but how did you have somebody set up a static gateway incorrectly?
No, I called them, the person who can connect to it, we connect to the web interface, went to settings, no default gateway listed.
Not at all.
No subnet mask either.
No, that'll do it.
Yeah. Just the IP. And this has been going on for quite some time, and the IT, the camera people, they couldn't figure it out, so they called us. It took me about 30 seconds.
You know, I had a call like that about a year ago. Everybody on the inside could access the HVAC system, but nobody on the outside, they could not access the HVAC system. And I said, it's responding from the inside. It's working just fine. I would reroute everything. Everything worked fine. And then they came in and they had the wrong gate. They didn't have a gateway in there as well. So it took them they physically had to come down. And because I couldn't get into the HVAC system, they had to come down and get me in. And I said, there's your problem right there. You don't have a gateway. And they go, oh, and they were fixed.
Yeah. So the person who set these cameras up, he put it in one. Because I checked the other one. It was there. He just didn't feel like putting it in the other one. Maybe he assumed since one camera had it, the other one would share that gateway. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, that's double work. I mean, come on.
So that was a quick fix. But yeah, no default gateway, no subnet mask. Just the IP. Which I'm surprised the device, when you save that config, should have given an error. But it was probably Linux-based, and it didn't give an error.
Well, the HVAC is... All right. But the HVAC system also did not give an error.
Is that Linux-based?
I don't know. Potentially, because, I mean, you know, I would assume that if you're using Linux, you would remember to put a gateway in, but not all the time. Especially when especially if you're doing something static. The protocol should say, or, you know, all these devices should have, no gateway and error out.
Right. You hit OK or save, it should say, nope, not going to save that. We require all the entries to be completely filled out.
So speaking of devices then, I'm going to segue into something that I just thought of. Were you guys affected at all last week with the DDoS attack?
The one that affected the Twitter and all that stuff?
Yeah.
No.
I had a couple of clients call me because their sites weren't responding. They were just, you know, like the internet was slow where they were trying to connect to a... one client was trying to connect to a medical site and that medical site was down. And so we just changed her static DNS on her local machine, and it came back up. So Comcast here had issues routing due to it.
So if I read correctly, do you know what they were using to use the attack? Do you know what they were doing?
From the things that I read, it was all Internet of Things devices.
Yes, Internet of Things devices, which don't have passwords or... have set passwords that you can't change. Very, very bad. This is going to be a big problem. Even if you can change the password on whatever thing you got, most people are not going to do that.
No.
And the majority of them have set passwords or no passwords. Very, very. This could happen whenever they want, because they can use these Internet of Things as their army to provide attacks. It can be pretty bad. It can happen whenever they want.
Yeah.
So I just thought if you guys had any, I was kind of surprised at people calling me up. I only had about two or three calls saying, you know, the internet's running slow. And I'd say, well, there's a huge outage. It's going to just fix itself. You got to just be patient. And then only one, maybe two people who actually had, I tried to get to the site. It didn't work. I changed their DNS. It worked just fine. But you guys being over there, just curious. I mean, over there being East Coast, if you were affected more than we were.
I saw a heat map of the outage, and it looked to be more northeast.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to blame Dor, really.
Well, he's not really northeast either, so.
Well, he's more northeast than me and you.
Well.
Everyone's more northeast than us.
So that's why I'm blaming Dor.
But yeah, that's going to be an ongoing, continuous problem.
Yeah.
Internet of Things everybody's toasters and refrigerators are attacking Dine DNS.
But hey, I'd like to be able to look at my Pop-Tarts on my watch and see when they're going to be done.
And I would love to always see a picture of the inside of my fridge so I can start salivating.
Wouldn't it be dark all the time? Because you have to have internet.
I don't know, but that's what they're promoting, is that, hey, take a picture of my fridge so I can see what to pick up from the store.
You should have that service and just send them a blank picture. Say, well, the door's closed. It's dark in there. That's
right. It's broken.
it's working. It's just dark.
It's just dark. You will see what you need, then I would assume that those refrigerators have night goggles.
Infrared.
Whatever, I don't care. Just as long as you can see in the dark, that'd be awesome.
Just night vision.
Yeah. Yep.
I built a house about 12 years ago, and I ran all the cabling. And I did in this house as well, but when I built a house 12 years ago, I ran cabling throughout the whole house. And I put a cable where the refrigerator was going to be. Because I had heard that everything was going to be connected. And I said, let me just drop a line back here. And I never used it.
But you can if you wanted to.
Well, the person who lives there now could connect his fridge. I moved out, but yeah, he could connect his fridge now, and it could attack people across the internet.
I mean, I'm just thinking you can pull a cable from there around to the front, so when you're standing there trying to figure out what you can eat, you can look at your laptop and tweet about it.
What I did, everybody was saying, what are you, crazy? Why are you putting a drop back here? All the people at the workers. I said, hey, they're telling me I can plug this in, get a smart fridge, and watch TV on it, have a little computer in the door, and... Yeah, that never happened.
Well, not yet. It's coming.
And then you're gonna want to move back.
No, that's okay. See, now they'll be wireless.
That's right.
Wireless has improved in the past 12 years. So, of course, I still ran hardwire to all my rooms in my current house 2 years ago, and I'm glad I did. I have hardwire everywhere. I plug in my TVs and Xboxes and whatever. They're all hardwired. So, runs a lot better. I have gigabit everywhere.
Yeah, but you don't need that for the Echo and the Roku and the Stick.
Not yet.
So on Friday, I went to go and do a subcontracting job for a company. I hear from them about once or twice a year. And they were changing out their routers. And my job was just simply to show up, take out the old router, and they were going from a SonicWall to a Cisco something, Meraki something, I don't even know the number. But basically, all I was supposed to do is just go there, swap it out, be in and out in 10 minutes. And this company knows that I have my Fluke, and they were like, no, you don't even need that. We're going to pre-configure everything. As soon as it plugs in, our config will come down, and as soon as it detects a connection, then we'll be good to go. So I go there, and I kick everybody off the internet. We swap out the router, and he goes to do his stuff, and he's like, all right, I can see it, so go ahead and tell everybody to start going on. And out of habit, I just plugged in my Fluke anyway, hit my test, and I got a warning with the gateway and a fail on the DNS test and my two connections to the internet test. And so I had to tell him, well, before I go trying to tell people to connect, I'm getting these errors. Can you check on those for me real quick? So he goes in, looks around, and goes, oh, it's not working. And I said, that's why I have the Fluke. Otherwise, I'd have been walking around the office telling people, go ahead and connect, and then left, and they would have not been working.
You could have done that, gone out to your car, sat there for a few minutes, they called you back.
And said, I'm halfway home. That's going to be, it's going to be time and a half now because I got to backtrack.
Yeah,
that's a new charge.
And what I say is, hey, the home office says you can get back on now.
That's right.
So that was fun. So,
But he was able to fix it remotely.
Yeah, apparently they had some VPN connection. He could connect to the router. He had just misconfigured it.
Yeah, so I like those VPN connections. We have one off client that has like six offices, and we lock down the access to the router through the external interface to our IP address only.
Right.
The problem with that is our office got flooded when they had the big rains back in mid-August in the south in Louisiana. So now we're in temporary offices with a new IP address.
and you can't remote in to change.
I can't remote into any.
You've locked yourself out.
Any of my routers.
So you've got 20-hour road trips coming up.
Well, okay, so no, because I have the agent on them with the take control viewer. So when needed, I can still go into the server
system,
access the WatchGuard interface through the server, add our IP address to connect. But all the offices that have remote systems, remote offices, where it's not so easy to remote it to a computer that's there.
Well, couldn't you use something like go to my PC or TeamViewer or something like that and just have them get you into a PC on-site?
Yeah, well, they have the agent on the computer, so just letting them connect. But most of them have VPN, so I can just go to the server, open the WatchGuard interface, connect to the private IP, and reconfigure that way. So I can get to the WatchGuard interface across the VPN to the other offices and add my IP. VPNs are nice like that.
So how long are you going to have the temporary IPs?
Well, we've been what, mid-August? It's been over two months, and I'm hoping we'll move back to our office in a week or two.
And your ISP's held onto the original IPs for you?
I hope so. Otherwise, we'll have to go through this all again.
You'll be telling us another story about gave my IPs to somebody else.
We kept paying for the circuit, so hopefully it's still active and still has the right IP address. It's just more of a pain. We do them as needed. So if someone calls needing to change, I have to go in there and get to the web interface or however we're going to do it. I mean, I don't know how much you use WatchGuard. I know, Martin, you're thinking about doing WatchGuards, or you're going to be putting some in.
Yeah, so I'm getting more into them.
So a different way to configure than what I did was by allowing only my IP would be to, I could do a VPN client, right? Connect to the VPN, connect to the private IP of the router. Or I could, on the web interface, I could enable that for external use, but require authentication. So if I went to the external page, the WatchGuard would pop up asking me to log in, and then I could access the web interface from anywhere if I wanted to. But the VPN, mobile VPN, is probably better if you don't have a private IP or if you change IPs a lot. Do a VPN connection and then access the router's private interface. You can do a lot of things with the WatchGuard. I might actually start going over some of that stuff, but for people who are interested in WatchGuard or how to get better security. I don't know anything about Sonic Walls, Marvin.
That's okay. I do. And it's a lot of similar stuff. You can do, the VPNs, the lockdowns. I'm actually going to be upgrading 7 Sonic Walls by the end of the year, and we actually have to lock down remote desktop because this client was just using remote desktop, straight open, standard port. And it's a law firm, and they are an insurance defense firm. So all of their clients are insurance companies telling them now that they have to secure not only their data, but their backups and their remote connections. So we're going to be upgrading the Sonic Walls and getting VPN licenses and doing the SSL VPN remote connections.
So is that how you lock it down for them on a Sonic Wall? You do you acquire a VPN connection and then connect with an internal IP?
We're going to. They've got some branch offices that we're still just using the external internet connection, so we're going to lock down that. And they're going to have VPN tunnels between the offices, and they'll only be able to connect that way. And then anybody that wants to work at home or on the road will have a VPN client to install on their desktop or laptop or whatever.
So I'm wondering if, and that's the best way to do it, to acquire a VPN. WatchGuard has something called application control. And I'm curious if Sonic wants something similar.
They do.
So I can, as for instance, I can say, I want people to get to Facebook, but I don't want them playing the games. I can block Facebook games.
Right.
I can block different components of Facebook if I wanted to. But I can also, on an RDP policy, set it to only allow Microsoft Remote Desktop packets through. So I can do it. I can leave it open to any external can connect in, but I can say, I can kind of lock it down by saying only allow Microsoft Remote Desktop traffic. So if somebody's doing a port scan, it wouldn't reply. Does Sonic Wall have something like that?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yeah, and we do that a lot for when we want somebody to have access to you know, Google stuff and Gmail, but not Google Chat or anything like that. So we do, it's a very similar process.
What is it? You know what they call it for this article?
It's application, let me see. It's probably the same type of name. Let me go into one then. But it's very similar, but it's got a lot in there. I mean, it's it is not something that I take lightly.
I prefer the VPN connection, but sometimes clients just do not want to have that extra step of connecting it.
Yeah, here we go. Application control is what they have, is what they call it.
See, WatchGuard calls it application control. Yeah, so that's pretty similar.
And they've got all the categories. I mean, they've got it to where, you know, you can allow, you know, backup apps, browsing, business apps, database apps, download apps, email apps. And we've done it to where, you know, we block everything but Microsoft Exchange Mail. So anybody wanting to do...
But is that for web browsing?
This is... Yes. Or,
so that's more... Okay, so that's more like web blocker for WatchGuard. This is actually...
Well, but this is... No, this is apps as well.
Okay.
So, for instance, what is the one thing we did here? Here, for instance, here's remote access. So they've got all the remote access stuff. Even go to my PC, go to meeting. PC anywhere. We can block all of that and just allow remote desktop.
So you can do it on an inbound. So if I want to RDP into a computer, you can apply that to an inbound policy mm-hmm. and just say only allow this.
Yep. That is correct. So.
So what else are you doing with this company? You gonna they have a complete overhaul you need to do?
Well, we're gonna do a definite upgrade of their backup. Right now, they don't have cloud backup.
What are they doing? Tape.
They're doing a NAS, but it's only local, and it's about full. So I've been telling them they need to upgrade anyway. But the insurance company, I shouldn't say just insurance company. One of them is a big retail store. Shall I say the biggest retail store in the world? Is one of their clients, and basically has told them that they've got to secure their data at rest, which means we're going to need to encrypt some servers. They need to, you know, protect the data at rest, in motion, and verify that data is not only backed up, but cannot be lost. And that's the phrasing they used, so we're trying to interpret what that phrasing means. So we are basically going to be upgrading them to a full data product where we'll be doing the imaging with local and cloud backups, and we will be doing something that Datto introduced recently where it's the unlimited cloud backup. They used to just have like 1 year retention, 3 years, 5 years, but they've introduced something called unlimited. So we're gonna do that and see how far unlimited goes.
See that terminology, it can't be lost. What does that mean?
I don't know.
If it's on his NAS, he said, well, I can't lose it, it's right here. I can look at it. It's not going anywhere. It can't be lost. They just need to say you need to have something off-site, something.
Right.
They just, I guess they don't want to require you to have off-site. I guess you could do tape and then rotate the tapes off-site. I mean, I don't know what they mean by can't be lost.
It's funny.
Anything can be lost. Right. Even if it's off-site, it can be lost. Yep. If there's some kind of catastrophic error off-site, it can be lost.
So that's so we're in the middle of doing all that interpretation. I mean, they've come basically everything short of continuity. Is basically what they've done. So they haven't told us that we have to make sure that they can operate during the disaster, but they pretty much said, protect our data, encrypt it, protect the remote connections. That's why we're doing the VPN stuff, and protect our data.
So are they going to be doing port scans and network intrusion tests?
They have, yes. The part of the language is that they have the right to show up at any time to do an audit.
That's nice.
So I now get to add on a compliance component to my monthly service charge for them.
And they're backing up from a server to a NAS, or they use a NAS for their...
No, they're backing up from a server to a NAS. They've got multiple servers. They've got their main domain controller, which is also their DFS server that they're replicating data between five offices. They've got an on-premise Exchange server. They've got a SQL server for their main line of business application. And they've got the terminal server. So in total, they've got 10 servers.
All the way back up to one NAS?
Well, no, just the ones in the main office. Nexus are what's being backed up to that one NAS. Their domain controller, the files, the SQL Server, and the Exchange. But none of them are cloud protected.
Is this one of the ones that called you right before the hurricane saying, what can we do? Or they thought they were fine?
No, they thought they were fine.
That's good.
This is a customer that years ago when, was it Wilma that hit you guys 90, as well?
Wilma was in 92.
Okay, it was Katrina.
Okay.
And they were in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and every building in downtown Fort Lauderdale lost power except for theirs. So they're good. They have no fear.
Wow.
Except of losing these clients. So now that the clients have said they have to do it, they're willing to spend the money to do it.
Yeah, those kind of things, they're pretty much being forced to do it. And
yeah.
No matter what bill you give them or quote you give them, they're going to think it's high.
Oh, yeah.
Do we need all this? Is this how you interpret it?
Well, the fun thing is, you know, they're going from, you know, basically zero monthly cost to about $1,000 to send all of this off-site, because we're doing, I'm going to quote them a 12 terabyte solution for all their servers to get them off-site. So that's a big pill to swallow. So of course, you know, they're going to want to, you know, can we use Carbonite or something, you know, that sort of thing.
Carbonite, the dark side backup.
Yeah. So we shall see, but that'll be fun. All right. So we got an email. Do we want to tackle an email today?
We have a sound effect for an email.
You've got mail. What's that? I'd be your sound effect guy. What do they call that? What do they call the pig person who does sound effects? Some random name. Anyways,
well, he's not the grip. The board op.
We'll just call him Martin for now.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we got an email. I'm not going to read the entire thing. I'll just read a portion of it. I was given permission to use the name. Lewis sent this in and basically says, I got a topic that I would like to hear on Podnuts Pro regarding retainer contracts. I would like to know how you set yours up, the pricing, what's included, what's not included. Reason I ask is I've been referred to a potential client and they would like to have a fixed monthly cost. I have about 9 active clients. Most are hourly rate as needed. I have a couple that are on block hours, but I have no retainer clients. This would be the first. There's some other stuff he mentions in the email, but it's not related to that. But he basically says, I just would love your help and pointing me in the right direction, and that would be greatly appreciated. So how do we want to tackle a retainer question?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember in the retainer flat fee pricing is to make sure that there's never a flat fee, basically. You can do a flat fee, I think, for ongoing maintenance and ongoing support, but never, in my opinion, should you include project work or any kind of, I'd hate to say exclude all self-inflicted wounds, but if they're messing with things, causing you work, I tend to want to say that should be excluded too. I just don't like it when too many things are included in the all-you-can-eat flat fee pricing.
Yeah, because they'll just, you know, you'll quote them a price, and then they'll think, well, we can do anything, and next thing you know, you're there so much and working so hard, and you're not, and your cost is just going down, down, down.
I know one thing that I'd probably recommend is say our clients buy their computers from us. If we, and this is not, I can't say we do this all the time, but if somebody buys a computer, if Bob buys a new computer, I would say cover the cost to install Bob's new computer. But when Bob wants to give his to Mary, Mary wants to give his to Jane, Jane wants to give his to Joe, I don't want to do the computer merry-go-round because they want to rotate computers. To me, that's a project of computer reassignment, and it shouldn't be covered. I think one way to look at it is, you have to know the client. I don't like going into a new client and offering a fixed fee rate because I don't know how much it takes to support them. So before I can do any, I would recommend any flat fee. I would tell them, we're going to get you up to where I think you need to be. I'm going to come in, do site survey for this much. We're going to I'm going to have some recommendations of what I think you need to be, where to get you where you should be, that I can support you. All that is by the hour until you get to a point where you know what they have, they're working the way you want them to work. Then you should know about how many hours per month it should take you to support this client. Let's say it takes, you estimate 40 hours a month. If they want a flat fee, you can add a pad that, whatever your rate is. Let's just, let me get a calculator. My nifty calculator. 40 hours a month, let's say. Let's say you charge $100 an hour. If you charge them, that'd be $4,000 a month. You could just tell them it's $4,000 a month. But pad it. And you can, however you want to break it down, if they got 30 workstations, you could say, okay, well, it's this much per workstation, it's this much per server, it's this much per router, and I'll do all that for X amount of dollars a month. But in the end, you're still going to make what you're going to make. Does that make sense? How do y'all price them?
I don't have any retainer clients in that scenario. I have people who, I guess you would say, buy blocks of time from me. They buy a certain amount of time, that's what they use, and then anything that I do dips into that time, or they just say, never mind, we're just going to pay you, you know, one shot, 1 hour type thing.
We used to use, and we still do have some clients on the who buy blocks of time. And for them, it's important to know that there's no rollover hours.
Right.
This is not a phone provider. If I say your plan's $1,000 a month, that covers up to 12 hours, whatever. If they use 11, then they use 11. There's no, don't do rollover hours. You're going to kill yourself.
Right. No, I'm in the same way.
But if they're constantly going over, you need to tell them, look, now you're over. We're going to adjust this up because you're over every month. You can bill them for overages, but then they don't have their budgeted fee, you know?
Yep. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I used to have a spreadsheet. I have to see if I still have it. You could play with it. You could put in how much you want to charge per workstation, how much per router, difficulty level. So if it's an office full of just running Office, Word, and Excel, and one line of business application, it's much easier to support them than if it's an accounting firm with loads 20 programs on each computer, right? So you have to take that into account too. So this spreadsheet had a difficulty factor. You could say one is average, two, and it would give you multiple. But it is tricky to price the fixed fee. I think in the end, you just need to say, I think it's going to take me 40 hours. I want to make at least this much during those 40 hours. And however you provide it to them, be it so much per workstation, so much per person. Because remember, a person is going to have a computer, a phone, possibly a tablet, possibly a notebook. Are all these things going to be included? If so, you can break it down per device or per person. One thing I also see is if you give them the price for 10 people, and they hire two employees, don't forget to up your agreement to reflect those two employees, which I see happen all the time too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you stick with the original agreement, and then 6 years later, they have twice as many people, and you're still charging the same thing. You have to keep up on how much, if you're charging per user, and if it's $300 or $200 a month for per user, every time they add a user, yeah, you increase the agreement.
So for me, like I said, for me, I buy... My clients, some of my bigger clients will buy, you know, so many hours, like seven hours a month. And that's just for one client. That's, you know, one smaller client. But they'll buy seven. And if they keep going and every month, you know, the first month, usually it's a lot higher because there's a site survey. There's me getting everything ready. There's, you know, there's all of that kind of just build up to working with them. And then over the periods of a couple months go by, they may be pushing 9, 10, 12. And a couple months goes by like that. And then I have gone back to them and said, hey, you know, we think about wanting to adjust this because it saves them money and it allows them to budget, allows me to budget. I mean, from a selfish point of view, every time they go over, it's an hour charge. So I will lose money by doing that. But I think keeping clients happy and not taking your clients to you know, not just trying to gouge them will do that too. I think there's been maybe one client that I've had that they've overestimated, and then I've actually gone to them and we've brought them back down a couple hours, and they were really happy, and they have since referred me to other clients. So in the long run, I've made more. But you know, they were very pleased in the fact that I was willing to work with them to go down for just hours they weren't using. Now I'm not talking a couple hours. This is you know, multiple hours that they weren't using. So
Yeah, I definitely got to watch it, adjust it each way. Maybe have, I don't know, maybe have a quarterly review and say, look, the past quarter, you've averaging this many hours. Let's adjust it up or down to this, or, you know, biannual or something.
Because I think, you know, for me, being a small business, making sure that my clients is happy ranks just as much up there with making sure that I'm getting paid. Because if I don't have happy clients, then they're not going to refer me to other clients, and then I'm going to not be able to be paid. So there's a thin line with there, and finding that is tough, but it's nice and it's rewarding at the same time. Now, Matt, who works for a major conglomerate, he probably doesn't care.
It's like customer happiness. What is that? No.
That's something we draw on notepads. little customer complaint forums, the little tiny ones.
You know, there's a book called Customer Service is Worthless. Is that named after your company there, Matt?
I have, you know, we have many, all of our clients are happy. And, you know, in fact, I got a check. Somebody mailed a check in the other day, and they wrote a note on it with a smiley face saying, thanks, Matt.
Did that go directly to you?
No, but the girl who does accounts payable showed it to me. She looked, she wrote your smiley face note saying, thanks, Matt.
She photocopied it and stick it on the wall.
I'm not sure what happened to it.
Well, hope we got cash.
But, yeah, so in the end, I think when you price this stuff, don't underprice it. It's very easy to get out of control. But to price them, you have to know your client. You have to know what they run, right? Don't you agree? Somebody running Office is not as much work as somebody running four versions of QuickBooks, three versions of Peachtree, other accounting software. That's much more work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did do a retainer way back in the day, and I realized pretty quickly I can't live that way, because they would just, you know, take, and well, your own retainer, well, we need a bigger retainer if you're going to call me this much. So I basically, even before RMM tools, you know, came into my sphere, I started charging based on, you know, servers, based on desktops, based on applications. So my rate was actually different based on the customer I got. Some customers, you know, like you said, don't require as much work. So their cost per device was much less. You know, they just have, you know, Word, Excel, Outlook, and, you know, one thing, that's no big deal. But my law firms that have case management, SQL servers, you know, they've got all these add-ins that they want to do and stuff like that. So they're a little higher cost. But the one thing that I do is it's kind of a hybrid where I have what's called the base rate. And so this is what the least amount your bill is going to be. So that, you know, the stuff that's included in that are your patches, your updates, keeping your antivirus up to date, keeping your backup running. If you need, you know, a file restored, that'll be included. If it's minor virus remediation, that's included. But for the most part, anything else, if I've got to leave my office and come see you, that's an extra billable charge. Because that's, you know, I'm really coming out there at that point to do something like a new hardware installation or, you know, some sort of repair or whatever, and that's an unknown. So if I have to come see you, that's a charge. If it's more than a minor virus remediation, meaning it's something like CryptoLocker, CryptoWall, and you're not on any of our backup products that I can do a quick restore on, and I've got to come to your office, that's not included. That's going to be an extra charge. So that's kind of how I've always done it, where I've got a base amount so that if I don't have to come to your office, if we don't have to do anything special, but we're still doing all of the monitoring and all the patching and updating and stuff like that, here's your charge. And then as soon as we have to do something else, it's an hourly charge or a project rate. If I know I'm going to be setting up three new computers, maybe I'll just do I've set up enough computers that I know how long it's supposed to take me, and I'll just do a flat charge for that. But that's kind of how I do what I call my monthly service agreements. I don't even call them retainers.
Yeah. One thing you could say when you're doing these is remote first, because I've seen clients, you have an agreement and they want you to come out for everything. Well, I already pay you, it's the same price. So it's important to say all work we done remotely if possible, to be determined by tech, not by client, of what work to be done remotely. Second, another thing is watch out for your agreement of what your response time is. If you start adding a bunch of service agreement customers, telling them they all have priority, you got to watch out for that. They can't all have priority, right? Even if you have two clients, they can't both have priority. So you got to be careful of your wording about what their response time is. You could tell them they moved to the head of the list, right? But you can't tell them you'll call them back within 5 minutes or 30 minutes. Also be aware of, if you're supporting businesses, you don't want, in my opinion, 24/7, no.
No.
8 to 5, Monday through Friday, no holidays. That's the standard agreement. That's what the base should cover, those hours. One thing people don't do, which they should, built-in cost of living adjustment. You could say, let's just say it's $4,000 a month you're billing somebody. You need to bill in there a COLA adjustment. If it's 3%, 5%, whatever it is, every year, it will go up this much. Because you don't want to support them for 10 years and still be billing the same thing you did 10 years ago. It's very hard to come back and say, look, I know we have an agreement, but I need to raise it. If it's in advance, you're going to have an increase of whatever it is, 2%, 3% every year. I would put that in there. It's very hard to have the conversation to increase your rates when you have an agreement.
Yeah.
And I just lost what else I was going to say.
Martin's awesome.
I did write that down right here in my list, but I was going to get to that later.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to spoil it.
But for billing, I think know what you want to make, know how much time you're going to be spending, and however you want to divide it up to present it that way. But in the end, you need to make at least per hour what you think you'll be spending. You don't want to have your normal rate be $100 an hour, but your contract rate for them be $50 an hour. Right? In the end, if you're offering 40 hours of work a month, it should be close to what your hourly rate is. And you need to put in there that I think this needs to be reviewed to be adjusted every quarter, biannual, annually. It needs to be adjusted, because if you are saying 40 hours, you might not even tell them. You might not tell them, I'm estimating 40 hours. You just give them a price. But if you're spending 80 hours, that needs to be adjusted, and you need to have the option to be able to adjust this based on the amount of workload that you're experiencing.
So, Matt, here's a question that I have. When I bill my customers for their monthly service agreement, I have a breakdown as to how much it costs per device, per server, per firewall. But when I send them the invoice, it's one number.
Yep,
do you ever share that number with your customers?
No, they get a bill, one bill. Invoices, whatever it is the invoice. We don't
have,
it's not broken down with that. I mean, if they ask for it, we give it to them. We're saying, look, we got this number by, this much is your managed backup service, this much is your monthly agreement, this much is this. We could break it down, but their invoice just is a number that we've agreed on.
Martin, what, you were going to say something?
Same here, except for resale items. Like if I'm reselling them something and I've quoted them a cost, I will break down the resale items, but my services are all in one.
We invoice hardware and software separately, so they get different invoices for that.
So, interesting. I build them all together, but I have, like if I do the server installation, it's one price, but it won't say how many hours I spent installing that server.
Ours will have hours, how many hours we spent. Because they get billed from labor, we bill out of ConnectWise, and they're going to see it. I believe they're going to see the hours.
But you're billing them by the hour for those types of projects, right?
For that type of work, that's project work. Yeah, they'll get billed for that. Yeah.
I do.
Very important to project work from flat fee agreements.
I do the...
Because they'll have you running around everywhere.
I have the auto body philosophy where, you know, here's what we think it's going to cost, and if we get it done faster, that's our game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I just see too many people underpricing that. They think that the client's not going to like that big number. You can also have the client gather, especially if someone else has been doing work for them and you're taking over. I don't ask them to provide it to me, but you can tell them, look, I want you to go back and look at all the money you spent on labor. And let's only talk about labor. I don't want you to talk about hardware costs. I want you to go back at all the money you spent for labor the past 12 months and compare that to the quote I'm going to give you so you can compare. So they can kind of see if I'm in the ballpark or not. And they don't have to share it with me. They can just look at it. But I'm usually way under, because once I get their network to where it needs to be, it's so easy to support them. The problem, and if they don't want to do it, if they don't want to do any changes they don't want to get their network up where I want it to be, there's not going to be any agreement. It's all break fix. You break it, I fix it. Flat hourly rate. I don't do any support for, now they can buy block hours, but I'm not doing any kind of agreement for a client that doesn't want to get their network up to par. What about y'all?
I do that. Actually, I had a customer that left and came back, and that was one of the stipulations that they had to get their network up to what I call minimum standards in order to support them. And then basically they have 1 year to get it up to MB system standards. So I actually have two standards. The minimum that we'll come in and take care of, and then the MB system standards, meaning that they're going to keep their hardware up to date, they're going to keep their software up to date, they're going to stay on a support plan with their line of business applications. We're not going to support them if we can't call their vendors for support. Because a lot of customers will, you know, why do we need to call them if you will take care of it for us? You know,
right.
You know, the famous QuickBooks people, you know, they don't want to pay QuickBooks, and they think that we'll fix it, you know, for free as part of our agreement, and that we don't include any software as part of our agreement.
Right. And I mean, you could add, if you want to come up with a certain number to have them as a flat fee monthly budgeted number, one thing you can add on there is third party vendor maintenance. If they have a problem, you'll talk to the third party for them, but they have to keep those agreements with the third parties current. I mean, you can break this number down into a lot of things to get to your number. And then in the end, remember, your number is how much you want to make per month based on how many hours you think you're going to spend. That's what it boils down to. So I hope that helps him determine.
But, so Lewis, there you have it. It's a lot of information and a lot of different methods, actually, that you can obviously feel free to, you know, choose, you know, take some of our advice and try it out with a customer, add some on, take some off. And obviously, you know, I was going to mention something earlier that, you know, rates per area are different. So one of the things that I've heard being argued amongst, you know, managed service companies is, you know, how much to charge. And now some of them think that you have to charge a minimum of, you know, $85 per computer or whatever. And then you've got some that think that they can get away with charging $5 per computer. You know, you're going to have to find out what works in your area. I don't know if I could ever do the $5 per computer. you know, unless you're doing it as a loss leader or just to get somebody on a plan or something. But I've found that that doesn't work.
No, for support for a computer, maybe for antivirus and patch management, $5. But
that could be that minimum base fee. You know, it'll be this much for this thing. But yeah, if I ever have to do any work, it's gonna be my hour.
it's this much per month with an asterisk, and the asterisk is no labor included. Work being done.
That's just the joy of calling me. I would charge you to call me to pick up the phone. $25 for me to just do a motion from the phone to my ear.
And what I want to stress again, it's important to have the outs of these agreements to be able to increase them or have an out. You don't want to be locked into it. If you underestimated the hours, you do not want to be locked into that forever.
Absolutely. And I'll attest to that because one of my early clients that I did that with, they weren't a true retainer, so I could bill them hourly, but my hourly did not get raised for 4 years. And the administrator came to me one day and asked, how can we pay you less? And I said,
call me less.
I said, you can't. I said, you're already behind on what you should be paying me. And as a matter of fact, you'll be getting a letter at the end of this year that the rates are going up next year. And that's how I raised the rate. I actually sent them a letter, didn't even give them an option. I said, this was the old rate. You've had it for 4 years. Here's the new rate.
Yeah, and that's hard to do. I mean, if it's understood in the beginning that you're going to increase rates, inflation, whatever, I would put that in there.
Now, quick question for you, Marvin. I'm not looking for numbers, but was it a big rate or was it a small? Like, was it, you know what I mean? Was it a big increase or was it a small increase?
Let's just say it was a difference of $35 an hour.
Okay. That was, so to my customers, that would be a big one.
Yes. Well, for this, again, this wasn't like a small customer either. This was a customer that at the time was about 40 people in an office. And my original deal was to give them between 10 and 15 hours a week of time. So that came out to a lot of money. And it wasn't like they weren't making it. They were making plenty of money. But I just, you know, it was one of those things where it was early in my career, and I thought, I want to keep this customer. I'm not going to rock the boat. But I finally, you know, started to get to a point where I realized I can't let customers hold me hostage. And I just finally stood my ground. And I tell you what, they're one of my biggest customers right now, and they are pretty much, I'm getting a nice chunk of change from them each month. And actually, that's the customer, thinking back, that's the customer that's now going to be going to the 12 terabyte data solution.
Very nice.
Great.
All right. So not as torrid as last week.
This was downright steamy.
Yeah, it was steamy.
No, maybe not steamy is not the right word. Anyways.
Adjectives never used to describe tech podcast before. That's what.
Is that a web page you're going to start?
.com.
It'll be an open forum, so come add your words.
Great.
Listeners, join in.
And all the words that'll be in there will be added to spam filters all over the world.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So is that it for this week? Are we done?
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have, you know, I did want to go back, and I don't think that we mentioned, there were a couple of other people that had emailed to say that they had laughed, and I just want to make sure we recognize them. We had recognized, I believe it was John Morgan, is that correct, who said he laughed at Martin?
I got a few emails that people said they laughed at Martin.
Yeah, I didn't get any of those.
Brad Torrey said when Martin said everyone hurts. And the world famous Cody Cooper.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
Must not be world famous then.
Man, he and if he's listening to this, Cody, your jokes hit like Woodburn, and that's it. They stop. I don't even know you after Woodburn. North of Woodburn, you're dead dust. That's for you, Cody.
He actually didn't say he laughed. His phrasing was, I chuckled.
Oh.
So just a tad bit lower than a laugh.
Actually, that can't withstand.
Charles Perry sent us an email a while ago saying that he was thankful for the show. And it's this great way of spending time driving home.
All right.
And our natural banter, he says. So
this natural banter.
Natural banter.
Okay. All right. So that brings a close to this show. Any last words, gentlemen, before we sign off here?
Not for me. I guess those are my last words for this podcast.
Okay.
not for me. I had not for Matt either. Is mine.
All right. And as per usual, I will end this off with a quote from our founding father, Ben Franklin. Either write something worth reading or do something worth writing. And with that, we thank you all for listening, and have a good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.